I'm going to begin by asking kind of a silly question, but then later I'll try to show the relevance of it. During this busy time leading up to Christmas, have you ever wished for a time machine? Like if you find yourself utterly prepared on December 23rd or even December 24th, you could just get a time machine, go back in time, and maybe redo a couple of days a little more efficiently, and then be caught up and ready. My wife and I have recently been binge-watching Quantum Leap, the revival, and we had never seen it before. But in the plot of the show, there are two time travelers that are antagonists, and they're both traveling back and forth between future and past. And it's kind of dizzying, and I find myself wondering if there's some kind of master timeline someplace that keeps track of the sequencing of the rival time travelers and all that pretends. And Advent is a little bit like that. Think with me for a second. Advent is when the church waits in patient expectation for the birth of a baby who's already been born. Almost 2,000 years ago, in fact. And on this first Sunday of Advent, we go all the way back in time to Jeremiah, who lived about 6 centuries before Christ. And then with Jeremiah, we then look all the way into the future until the final fulfillment of God's righteousness. It's all a little bit dizzying, keeping track of past and present and future. But here's where that silly question is relevant and where it becomes more wistful, maybe, but still expressive of our deep longings. When do we really wish for a time machine? Probably not just to get ready for Christmas or some holiday, but probably when we want to go back to the past to undo our deepest regret. Have you ever wanted a time machine to do that? To take back those words spoken in anger? To take back those selfish moments when you only considered yourself and not the ramifications of what you were doing for everyone else? And then the other occasion when we might wish for a time machine is to travel to the future so that we could have some kind of reassurance that it really does get better. Is the present despair all that we will witness? Well, Jeremiah had both wishes. As Jeremiah is ministering to the people of Israel, there is this sense of regret. If only they could go back in time and undo all those decades of unfaithfulness and maybe not have to go into exile after all. And then because the devastation was so great, the Babylonians not only invaded Jerusalem, they razed it to the ground. Solomon's temple was gone. All of the administrative buildings were gone. It was utterly devastating, and the people faced a time of despair. And so Jeremiah does indeed look all the way forward to when God will come and say, "The Lord is our righteousness and will execute justice and righteousness in the land." And likewise, the church does this as well. We believe that Jeremiah's promise was fulfilled in the coming of Christ. But yet that's always a now and not yet. Christ has come, but we are not yet living in God's final and joyful realm. There is much that causes us grief. And so somehow during Advent, our focus is on the future. Centering our hopes on what is to come, trying to rely on God's timing. Some of you may recall a movie many years ago, The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. It was a wonderful little film, and one of the characters was a little chipper, maybe too chipper, and one of his mantras was, "Everything will be okay in the end. And if it is not okay, then it is not yet the end." And the late Calvin Butts, the pastor of the Abyssinian Baptist Church in Harlem, once said very similar. During his long ministry there, the church had many kinds of programs for people in the neighborhood. They established a bank for people with no credit or bad credit. They had tutoring programs. And one time Calvin Butts was being interviewed by a reporter who noticed all the buildings that were in bad shape and all the other signs of what he might call blight. And he asked him, "Your church has been doing a lot for a number of years, but is it making any difference? And does that ever get you down?" And Calvin Butts replied, "We've read the Bible. We know how the story ends. And it is not yet the end." This first Sunday in Advent really is when we look forward, not just the coming of Christ, but to that final culmination in history. When, as we said last week, we no longer have to pray, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven," because all of that will be happening right before our eyes. It's our deepest hope and something that may seem to elude us. But we're invited to keep our focus there. And one of the things that we're waiting for is for the coming of the one who we will say, "The Lord is our righteousness." Now, what does that mean? That word righteousness is one of those religious sounding words that isn't commonly used. And we may not even like it because it reminds us too much of self-righteousness. But the true meaning of righteousness is not holier than thou. It means getting it right. Getting it right. Doing it rightly. That is the meaning of righteousness. My favorite writer, Frederick Buechner, described righteousness by this little parable. There was a piano student who was playing a piece for his teacher. And he hit every note just right. His mechanics were okay, but his heart wasn't in it. He was not only boring the people who were listening to him, but he was boring himself. And the teacher said, "You're not doing it right. If you were doing it right, every toe in the place would be tapping. And everyone here would feel the joy of the music with you." It's this invitation to do it right, to do it with purpose, with intention, to do it in such a way that it makes a positive difference in our own lives and the lives of people around us. And so living in righteousness, doing our best to do it right, is living in anticipation of when God will come and will finally get it right. In all the ways that we cannot, in all the ways that are beyond the spans of our lifetime, we are looking forward to that day when God will finally get it all right. And at this table, to hear that phrase, "The Lord is our righteousness," is a reminder that at this table we receive spiritual nourishment so that we can live in anticipation of God's righteousness. And we can have strength to live as if it is already fulfilled. Here we take the long view. We keep watching and we keep looking. All glory and praise be to our God. Amen.